gathered this evening for my annual pre-Christmas party, and I do hope you will all have the loveliest of times," Felicia announced as she took her place in front of the microphone. "However, this year we have lost a shining star from our midst, our dearest friend, Nora Dangerfield, taken from us so cruelly. Before we go back to our celebrations, I'd like you to raise a glass to Nora's memory." Felicia paused to hold up her own cocktail glass. "To Nora, may justice be done and your memory live on." There was a ripple of assent from the partygoers as everyone dutifully raised their glasses. The toast given, Felicia thanked everyone for coming and urged them to enjoy themselves before relinquishing the microphone to the singer once more. The music and dancing resumed, with the room soon returning to its previous buzz of activity and laughter. Mortimer wandered away, and Edgar became engaged in conversation with a couple of ladies who had made a beeline for him.
"Shall we take a turn on the dance floor?"
Matt asked, extending his hand to Kitty.
"We may as well enjoy ourselves a little," Kitty agreed.
They abandoned their drinks on a nearby table, and Matt took her in his arms. The dance floor was crowded, and there was little room to do more than slowly circle the space. He always enjoyed dancing with Kitty, and it was nice to do something other than try to solve Nora and Peggy's murders.
"Felicia has a lot of friends," Kitty murmured.
"The cream of New York society, according to your father,"
Matt agreed with a grin. They danced to a few more songs before Matt offered to brave the crowd at the bar to get them a drink that wasn't one of Felicia's festive fizzer cocktails. Kitty happily agreed, subsiding onto one of the few vacant gilt chairs just off the dance floor. She was hot now from the exercise and the crowd and was looking forward to a refreshing drink. She fanned her face with her hand and looked around her, idly watching the crowd. Evening-suited waiters were circulating now with silver platters of canapés, and the room was noisy with music and the buzz of chatter and laughter. The huge crystal chandeliers sparkled overhead, and it seemed that everyone was enjoying the party. Kitty twisted round to see if Matt had managed to get anywhere near the front of the polished mahogany and brass bar located near the entrance doors. She spotted Titania deep in conversation with a tall, distinguished-looking man who appeared to be plying her with champagne. There was no sign of Mortimer. She couldn't see her father either, and guessed he was probably still entertaining the ladies who he'd been speaking to earlier. She spotted Matt near the head of the queue for drinks and relaxed back in her chair to look towards the dance floor. She straightened up in her seat and leaned forward, uncertain at first if her eyes were deceiving her. Admittedly, she had only met the woman once a few hours before, and it had been a fleeting meeting at that. Kitty was sure, however, that the young woman who had been with Rudolph at the restaurant during lunch was here now. He was standing close to her in a darker corner of the room, as if not wishing to be seen or overheard. Her hands were in his, and they looked very cozy. Kitty wondered if Lorena was still at the party. If she was, he was taking a big risk. She jumped up from her seat and sidled through the crowds, taking care that neither Rudolph nor his companion should notice her. She got as close as she dared, concealing herself behind one of the fluted marble Doric-style pillars that were dotted around the room.
"You promise you'll tell her when you get back?"
Kitty heard the girl say. She was dressed in a pale blue satin gown that looked cheaper than the ones the other women were wearing.
"Of course, I would have told her already, but with her mother being killed, well, it would have been too much," Rudolph said.
She had to strain to hear his responses, since his voice was lower than his companion's, and he tended to mumble.
"Oh, Rudy, I'm so glad I managed to see you tonight. I don't know how I'll bear it while you're away."
The girl looked up at Rudolph with adoring eyes.
"Not much longer now, my darling. Anyway, you have your Christmas present from me to open on Christmas morning, And we've been able to meet tonight. Rudolph smiled at the girl. Don't forget to keep that other package safe. I don't want Lorena trying to turn me over in the divorce.
Kitty's eyes widened at this. Rudolph was obviously promising marriage to the girl she had encountered at the restaurant. He must love her a lot to give up his comfortable lifestyle with Lorena. His girlfriend was obviously not wealthy, and Lorena's own money seemed secure.
I will. I'll do anything for us, you know that.
The girl glanced around, as if to see if they were being observed, and Kitty ducked back behind a fronded palm. Her pulse raced, and she hoped she hadn't been spotted lurking in the greenery. She peered through the fronds to see the girl risking a kiss from Rudolph before melting away into the crowd. Kitty dodged back out of sight as Rudolph looked around, straightening his bow tie. Her heart thumped as she waited a moment for Rudolph to move away towards the bar before she risked heading back to where she had been seated before. The chair was obviously now taken, and Matt was standing looking around the room with a perplexed expression and a cocktail glass containing a drink of a less lurid colour in each hand.
I thought I'd lost you in the crowd.
Where did you go?
He asked, handing her one of the glasses.
I spotted Rudolph meeting up with that girl we saw him with at the restaurant at lunchtime, Kitty said, before taking a grateful gulp of her favourite Negroni cocktail.
Matt grinned at her.
A spying mission, then? He was taking a risk, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Kitty smiled back and moved closer to him to tell him in a low voice what she had overheard.
I must say I'm surprised,
Matt said after he'd listened to Kitty's story.
Rudolph must have really fallen for this girl. She didn't seem as if she was on the same social level as Lorena and Rudolph, from what you noticed, and he strikes me as a man who likes his comfort.
He could just be stringing her along, I suppose. He seems a real womanizer.
Kitty took another sip of her drink.
I suppose so. I wonder what's in the package he's given her. He doesn't possess anything of his own, does he?
Matt said.
Kitty shrugged. Perhaps he's been saving up some money secretly, or has taken something valuable that was Nora's or Lorena's so they would have something to live on after he leaves her.
She could imagine that Lorena would not take the news of Rudolph abandoning her very well. She had already seen how she had reacted to Nora's death, so she could see that Rudolph would swiftly find himself evicted and penniless. She had been quick enough to dismiss Horatio and Peggy. Matt drained the rest of his drink.
New York is very different to Devon. Everyone here seems to be having an affair or a divorce. It's so complicated. Mrs. Craven would be mortified.
Grams would be too. It's certainly not what I expected,
Kitty agreed. Lorena approached them.
Have either of you seen Rudolph? I have the most terrible headache, and I want to go home.
Kitty thought the girl did look pale.
I thought he was near the bar a minute ago.
I'll go and look for him for you, Matt offered.
Thank you.
Lorena gave him a grateful smile.
That was a nice toast Felicia gave to your mother,
Kitty said.
Yes, it was kind of her. There are a lot of my mother's friends and acquaintances here tonight. I must admit it's been quite wearing having to speak to everyone and hear them express their condolences when you know they just want some inside gossip on the investigation.
Lorena sounded quite savage, and she swayed on her heels. Kitty looked about for a vacant seat and grabbed one from under an elderly lady's nose, earning herself a, well, really, in the process.
Here, have a seat. I'm sure Matt will track Rudolph down in a trice,
Kitty said soothingly. Lorena rubbed her hand across her forehead.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Bryant, if I've been so out of sorts. You must think I'm awful. It's just that I'm finding it hard to believe that my mother is dead. Murdered. It seems impossible.
I quite understand, Kitty said. And then, of course, Peggy's murder as well. It's no wonder you're feeling the strain.
Lorena gave her a tight smile.
I must admit, when Rudolph suggested a vacation, I thought he was crazy, but I'm beginning to see the sense of it now. I can't wait to be on that airplane tomorrow.
Will you be away long? Kitty asked. She couldn't help feeling guilty, knowing what she had just seen and heard. Lorena was unlikely to have a happy homecoming if Rudolph did leave her for his girlfriend.
Only until Christmas is over. Mother loved Christmas. She and Dad always made a big thing of it when he was alive, and Mom kept that up. Dad, being an orphan, he wanted to experience all the things he missed when he was younger, Lorena explained.
I can understand that. This time of year is often hard for many people, I think.
Kitty could see Matt returning with Rudolph.
Oh, here they are.
Lorena, honey, let me get you home.
Rudolph took his wife's arm as she stood up from the chair.
Thank you for looking after her.
He nodded at Matt and Kitty.
Our pleasure. I hope you feel better soon, and enjoy your holiday, Kitty said as the couple walked away.
Are Lorena and Rudy going now?
Felicia had popped up like a plump Christmas fairy, her beady gaze darting around.
Yes, I think Lorena has a migraine, and it's been hard for her seeing everyone, Kitty said.
I must go and say my goodbyes to them. I expect I can catch them at the cloakroom.
Felicia hurried off in pursuit.
What do you want to do now? Matt asked. Fancy another spin on the dance floor?
Why not?
Kitty guessed it would be a while before her father would be ready to leave. There was always the chance, too, that they might learn something more about Mortimer and Titania before they went home. She allowed Matt to lead her to the dance floor once more, and they passed a very happy half an hour dancing. Edgar found them and took over from Matt to whirl Kitty about.
I'm so glad you're here tonight to save me from the predatory single females of New York, her father said as they danced past one of the women he had been speaking to earlier.
Kitty laughed. She always enjoyed dancing with her father as he was light on his feet. She told him about what she had witnessed between Rudolph and his girlfriend.
Really? I must say I'm surprised he's taken such a risk. He's quite the dark horse, isn't he?
Edgar said, as he manoeuvred them into a clear spot on the floor.
You said he'd had other women that he's been involved with that Lorena hasn't known about?
Kitty asked.
Oh, yes, he is quite the Casanova. Nora was not happy with him about it. She didn't want Lorena to be hurt, Edgar explained.
Kitty wondered about that. It seemed to her that Rudolph could definitely be in the frame for murdering his mother-in-law. What if that package he had entrusted to his girlfriend contained Nora's stolen jewelry? And if Peggy had found out what he'd done, then he could have killed her too.
Chapter 21 Matt had secured some seats and a table when Edgar returned with Kitty. She sank down onto a chair and picked up the drink that he had waiting for her.
Oh, this is lovely. Thank you, darling. I am so thirsty.
Matt and Edgar took their seats, and the three of them settled back to catch their breath and to watch the other guests. Titania danced past in the arms of the gentleman Kitty had seen her with earlier.
She seems to be enjoying the party,
Kitty remarked, as Titania gave them a little wave with the tips of her fingers as she went by.
Titania is never slow to enjoy herself, Edgar remarked in a dry tone as they all gave her a little wave back.
I wonder where Mortimer has gone, Kitty asked.
I saw him a moment ago when I fetched these drinks. He was propping up the bar, Matt replied. It looked like he was settling in for quite a session. Oh dear.
Edgar looked at him.
Then may I suggest, dear boy, that we say goodnight to Felicia and make our way home toot sweet. Otherwise we could become enmeshed in a tricky situation. I have no desire to deal with an inebriated Mortimer again tonight.
He finished his drink in a couple of swallows and stood up to leave. Matt could see what his father-in-law meant. He had no wish to deal with a warring married couple and a drunken Mortimer either. Kitty nodded her agreement and finished her own drink.
I quite agree. I'm tired anyway now. All that dancing has absolutely worn me out, she said. They made their way to the door, only stopping to say goodnight and give their thanks to Felicia for inviting them. They retrieved their coats from the cloakroom and joined the queue of people waiting for the hotel concierge to obtain taxis for them. Blasts of icy air filtered into the lobby every time the hotel doors opened and someone left. Matt saw Kitty shiver and snuggle down deeper into her coat, pulling up the collar to protect her face against the cold.
Not long now, darling, and we'll be home in the warm.
He placed his arm around her. They were nearly at the head of the line when Kitty placed her hand on his arm.
That's Rudolph's girlfriend.
She inclined her head towards a young woman in a worn wool coat with a knitted hat covering her fair hair. The girl was standing at the side of the queue. She had her purse in her hand and seemed to be counting her money as if trying to see if she could afford a taxi. Matt guessed she had probably missed the last bus and he wasn't aware of how the subway system ran.
Excuse me, aren't you the girl I met at lunchtime today?
Kitty had spotted the girl's distress. The woman looked at her and then Matt saw recognition dawn.
Oh my gosh, yes. At the restaurant in the restroom.
We're just getting a cab now. We could easily drop you off somewhere on our way. It's such a beastly night, Kitty offered. Matt saw hope flare in the girl's face.
Are you sure? We might not be going in the same direction.
She looked back at her purse with a troubled frown.
I insist. We couldn't possibly let a lady travel alone on a night like this. Taxis are in short supply this evening, and I expect the last bus has already gone,
Matt said firmly.
Well, if you're absolutely certain, I would be really grateful, the girl said.
The concierge beckoned to them to say they had a cab, and they got into the taxi. Edgar took the seat in the front, while their new companion sat next to Kitty, with Matt on the other end of the rear seat.
Where to, my dear? Edgar asked her.
The girl gave the driver directions, and the cab pulled away into the darkened streets.
I suppose I should introduce myself, the girl said. I'm Sally Shaughnessy.
She then offered her hand, and they shook it.
I really am no end grateful for this. You have no idea.
I'm Kitty Bryant, and this is my husband, Matt, and my father, Edgar, Kitty said. I'm glad we were able to help you. It's dreadfully cold tonight.
It is. I was starting to panic a bit when I realized the time. The bus I was supposed to get didn't come, and then it got so late, I thought if I went back to the hotel, I could try and grab a ride to get as close to home as I could. I really do appreciate this. Can I give you some money towards my fare?
The girl started to delve for her purse once more.
We wouldn't hear of it. It's not much out of our way,
Matt fibbed. He guessed Kitty had been keen to get the girl's address and wheedle some more information from her.
Were you at Felicia's party? Kitty asked in a friendly tone. I only stepped in for a moment. I had other business in the area.
Matt saw colour creep into the girl's pale cheeks, and he guessed she was trying to hide that she had been smuggled in by Rudolph.
Hopefully you avoided drinking those ghastly cocktails, Edgar joked with a mock shudder.
Oh, I'm not drinking alcohol at the moment. I've kind of lost the taste for it recently.
The colour in the girl's cheeks deepened. He saw Kitty give her a sharp glance.
Well, you didn't miss anything, I assure you.
The taxi had turned away from the bright lights of the broad main avenues to enter a poorer area where the lighting was not so good and the storefronts had given way to shabby brick tenements with metal fire escapes. Tattered posters were pasted on the walls and Matt noticed an eviction notice pinned on a nearby door. The cab pulled to a halt outside one such place. Edgar immediately jumped out to open the car door to assist the girl onto the sidewalk.
Do be careful, my dear. It's jolly slippy, he warned.
I'll be all right. My place is just here. Thank you again. I sure do appreciate this,
Sally said, indicating a nearby entrance.
She waved her leather-gloved hand in farewell as Edgar got back inside the cab and closed the door. Matt gave the driver the address to Edgar's apartment, and they pulled away as Sally took out a key and let herself into her building.
"Well, we have her name and address now," Matt observed, as the taxi turned back towards the wealthier part of the city.
"Indeed." Kitty seemed thoughtful. It was almost midnight when the taxi dropped them back at the apartment. To Matt's surprise, Horatio was downstairs talking to the night concierge when they entered the lobby.
"Good evening," Edgar said, greeting the manservant. "Rather late for you tonight, isn't it, dear boy? No problems, I hope?"
Horatio returned Edgar's greeting and said good evening to the rest of them.
"No, sir. No problems. It's just that I haven't been out of the apartment for a couple of days with all the packing and sorting for Miss Lorena. I wanted to make sure my parcels of gifts for my family at home made the morning post. Xavier here is going to drop them at the post office on his way home. I know they won't get there in time for Christmas Day, but hopefully they won't be much after that,"
Horatio said. Matt could see a couple of small, neatly wrapped packages tied up with string sitting in one of the cubby holes at the back of the desk.
"It's quicker than waiting for our mail carrier to come by, especially this time of year," Xavier explained.
"I also realized I hadn't been down to collect Miss Nora's post."
Horatio picked up a bundle of mail from the countertop.
"I expect I shall have to telephone Miss Lorena after breakfast to come and collect it. It's probably Christmas cards, but you never know. There might be something important in there."
"We saw Lorena this evening. She and Rudolph are off on a vacation leaving tomorrow afternoon, so probably best to get her to check it before she leaves, in case there is anything that needs dealing with urgently,"
Matt advised.
"Yes, I expect Lorena would like to get as many things in order as possible before she goes away. You know how she is,"
Edgar agreed.
"Anyway, we had better get upstairs. It's been a busy night."
Matt said goodnight to the two men, and Kitty stepped over to the elevator and pressed the button to call it down. They left Horatio to finish making his arrangements with Xavier and travelled up to Edgar's apartment. Matt noticed Kitty was still quiet as she took off her coat, hat and gloves and warmed herself in front of the fire before she offered to make them all a milky drink before bed.
"Not for me, darling. I'm turning in. I feel quite tuckered out. Felicia and her parties tend to have that effect on me."
Edgar kissed her cheek affectionately and said goodnight to Matt before retiring to his room. "Matt?" Kitty asked, looking at him.
"Yes, please, if you're making a drink, that sounds lovely."
Matt settled himself in Edgar's chair while Kitty went to heat up the milk and add the cocoa powder. He could tell she was busy turning something over in her mind and guessed that neither she nor he would sleep unless she talked about it. A warm drink would help them to settle and sleep more easily. Kitty emerged from the kitchenette, carrying two large mugs in her hands. She placed one in front of Matt and set the other one down on the other side of the table before taking her place in the fireside chair opposite him.
"I feel quite exhausted now," she said, unclipping her earrings from her ears and dropping them onto the table next to her cup.
She rubbed her earlobes between her fingers to ease where the clips had dug in slightly.
"I'm not surprised after all the dancing."
Matt undid his bow tie and unfastened his shirt stud. He too was relieved to be back and relaxing.
"It's not just the physical exercise, though, is it? I mean, at home, I walk miles with Bertie every day. This is more mental tiredness from trying to work out who killed Nora and Peggy," Kitty said.
Matt inclined his head in agreement. He knew what she meant. It was much harder being in a strange place with time and the weather against them to try to get answers. The police didn't want their help, and it was already Christmas Eve.
"Do you feel we learned anything new tonight?" he asked.
Kitty picked up her chunky pottery mug and cradled it in her hands. I think we learned that everyone there had a motive to kill Nora.
Even Mortimer? Matt asked.
He personally would have said Mortimer was low on his list of suspects. I think he could have killed Peggy, and he had the opportunity to kill Nora. We only have his word that she was going to marry him. She may have changed her mind. And of course, he'd already asked Titania for a divorce. He could have found himself with neither woman wanting him. Titania also said he has a jealous streak.
Kitty had obviously been thinking about this. He could have killed her in anger and then murdered Peggy if she had found out. We know he said she opened the door to him that night. We only have his word that she sent him away.
Matt tried the theory in his mind. Mortimer had been acting strangely since Nora's death, even trying to pin the blame on Edgar. It could just be grief, but it could also be guilt. Titania could have murdered Nora to stop her from stealing Mortimer. She had already assaulted her on the night of the party. We know she's very jealous and possessive. Then Peggy could have realized, and Titania could have killed her, Kitty said.
It's possible. Titania does have quite large, almost masculine hands, and she looks like a strong woman. If she took Nora by surprise, she could have strangled her,
Matt agreed. Lorena could have murdered her mother to free herself from Nora's financial control of her and Rudolph. Kitty paused and took a sip of her cocoa. Matt could see she had started to relax now she was working through her theories.
And we know Rudolph is having an affair with Sally and has told her he is going to ask Lorena for a divorce. I wonder if he knows how tightly wrapped up Lorena's money is, Matt mused. He didn't accompany her to see the attorney to hear what was in the will.
That was odd, I thought. Still, they are all odd. Everyone is having affairs with everyone else. It's so confusing, Kitty said. He did tell Sally, too, that there was something valuable in that parcel he has left with her.
That could be money, some of Nora's silver, or even her jewellery, if he is our murderer, Matt said.
He picked up his own cup and took a drink. It made him feel a little homesick. This was the part of the day he always enjoyed most, sitting with Kitty, sipping cocoa or Ovaltine before bed. Bertie at Kitty's feet, and Rascal curled up nearby while they talked about their cases.
What did you think of Sally? Matt asked.
She doesn't have much money, Kitty said. Where she lives is in quite a poor area. The depression has hit hard there. I saw in Papa's newspaper about all the food queues. People are really suffering.
Yes. Rudolph must have fallen pretty hard for Sally, if he is prepared to give up his life of comfort and ease to marry her, Matt said. It's clear that financially she and Lorena are in a different league.
Everything to do with these murders seems to be tangled up in relationships, money and marriage, Kitty said. She finished her cocoa and tried to keep back a yawn.
Let's call it a night. Time for bed, I think. It's our wedding anniversary now, too, since it's after midnight, so we should plan to do something nice.
Matt smiled at her and finished his own drink. There would be time to think about everything in the morning. Chapter 22. Kitty woke surprisingly early the next morning, despite their late bedtime. The room was still dark when she slipped quietly out of bed. She retrieved the small gift she had been hiding for Matt to celebrate their anniversary and took it with her. Matt was still slumbering peacefully as she made her way into the sitting room to turn on the fire. The air was cool but not cold, and she wondered if the apartment's heating had been adjusted at last. She drew back the thick curtains to look outside at the still dark streets of the city. The horse-drawn delivery carts were already busy outside the shops, and a few buses filled with workers went past, mixed with cars and taxis. She made herself a pot of tea in the kitchenette and took a seat at the small dining table so she could continue to watch the street scene below. She watched a man hurrying along the icy pavement and into their apartment block, followed shortly afterwards by another man leaving the building. She realized it must be the changeover of the concierge staff, since Xavier had a load of packages under his arm as he walked away down the street. Kitty sighed and poured herself some more tea from the pot. Ever since last night, she had felt as if the solution to who killed Nora and Peggy was right under her nose. She just wished she could think of what it was that was eluding her to make the whole thing make sense. It was lighter now outside, and the street was busier. At least it didn't look as if more snow was likely to fall. It was hard to believe it was so close to Christmas. The leather wallet she had bought for Matt, inscribed with his initials and their wedding date, lay on the table lovingly wrapped in tissue paper. She and Matt had married on Christmas Eve at the ancient church in Dartmouth 2 years earlier. They certainly hadn't foreseen that they would be celebrating their second anniversary in America up to their necks in murder. She wondered how long Mortimer had been married to Titania since she had said he was her third husband. She had assumed they had been married for ages, but perhaps they hadn't. Was that why their marriage had run into trouble since it was Titania's third marriage? Perhaps it hadn't worked from the start, and that was why Mortimer was intending to marry Nora instead. Kitty sipped her rapidly cooling tea. Why had Peggy been taking Nora's silver and pawning it? She hadn't stolen anything. Or had she? She tried to recall if Lieutenant Tanfield had said if anything was still missing. During the conversation she had overheard before Peggy died, Lorena had accused Peggy of dishonesty and had said her mother had told her she was thinking of dismissing the girl. Had that just been grief, manifesting itself as anger, or had Nora discovered something about what Peggy had been doing? Nothing so far had been discovered to support a theory that Peggy needed money for drugs or drink or gambling. So what had she needed the money for? Kitty poured the very last of the tea from the pot. It was quite strong now, so she added extra milk, thinking as she stirred the dark liquid in her china cup. Peggy obviously needed small sums of money regularly in order to replace or retrieve the objects she'd pawned and then put back in Nora's apartment. Did she get the things back once she was paid? Or if she loaned the money to someone else, did she fetch them once that person had repaid her? Everyone had seemed agreed that Peggy was not the brightest of girls, but that she was kind-hearted and hard-working. Nora had trusted her with the money raised from the charity night, leaving Peggy and Horatio to secure it in the safe. Peggy could easily have stolen that money and disappeared with it after Nora was killed. Peggy and her brother had both moved to New York from a small town, exactly the kind of place that had been hit hardest and where people were the poorest during this difficult time. Kitty recalled the tenement where they had dropped Sally off just a few hours earlier. Peggy's brother probably lived in a very similar area. He had taken two buses to get across the city to collect her things after her death. Peggy's brother was working and had seemed quite honest and forthright about his relationship with his sister. Despite living in the same city, they had kept in touch by letter. Peggy couldn't have been loaning her brother money, as she didn't see him very often. She was certain, too, that he would have mentioned it, as he knew nothing of her trips to the pawn shops with Nora's silver. Could she have been supporting someone else with the money? Wiring small amounts back to her hometown? Kitty finished the last of the tea and shuddered at the strength of the brew. If that had been the case, then Peggy would have just sent it from whatever she could spare from her salary. She would have no need to pawn things, would she? Someone else had planted that idea in her head, or had pressured her to do it. Kitty sighed. Horatio had spent all his savings sending money for medicine and living expenses to his family. Perhaps Peggy, too, had wanted to try and help some of the people who had helped her. She drummed her fingers restlessly on the tabletop. Had Peggy been bright enough to think of taking Nora's things to the pawn shop herself after all? Everyone had stressed that Peggy seemed honest. Had she been persuaded by someone else that it wasn't theft? She had merely borrowed the things, and once they were returned, then no harm would have been done. Perhaps the same person who had benefited from the loans. Her thoughts raced around her head. Kitty's father sauntered into the room, dressed in his pyjamas and silk dressing gown.
"Morning, Kitty. It's nice and cosy in here. Anything left in the pot?"
He eyed her empty teacup.
"I'll make some fresh tea. This one is empty," Kitty said, rising from her chair and greeting him with a kiss on the cheek. She busied herself in the kitchenette and returned a few minutes later with a newly laid tray. Edgar had seated himself in his favourite seat beside the fire.
"Thank you, my dear. I take it Matthew is not awake yet?"
he asked.
"No, not yet," Kitty said, seating herself opposite her father.
"Well, happy anniversary to you both for today, anyway,"
Edgar said as he stirred the tea in the pot. He passed a card to her.
"Thank you."
Kitty smiled affectionately at him as she opened it. She added it to the Christmas cards on the mantelpiece.
"Christmas Eve already."
Her father replaced the lid on the pot and arranged the metal tea strainer over the top of his cup.
"It seems to have arrived very quickly."
"It does," Kitty agreed. "Papa, I was just thinking about Peggy taking Nora's things to the pawn shop. Did she ever mention anyone she felt sorry for, or who she was helping in some way?"
Her father considered her question while pouring his tea.
Peggy was one of those girls who liked to be helpful. She was very soft-hearted. Nora told me once she found her sobbing over some tale of woe she had been reading in the paper about some children orphaned after a fire."
He set the teapot down and looked at her curiously.
"Why, what are you thinking?"
"Probably nothing useful," Kitty admitted. "But she must have had a reason for wanting sums of money for short periods of time."
"True. And you think she may have been giving the money to someone with a sob story?"
Edgar asked as he picked up the milk jug.
"Is that something she would do?" Kitty asked.
Edgar finished helping himself to milk and nodded.
"Oh yes, she would always put money in charity boxes or give children a few cents if she could. She had a kind heart."
Kitty could see how someone could have manipulated Peggy into acting on their behalf, persuading her that what she was doing wasn't stealing and that she was helping them to help someone else. It could have been that it wasn't Peggy who had a gambling, alcohol or drug problem, but the person controlling her. If Peggy had wanted to stop what she was doing, they could have blackmailed her into continuing by threatening to tell Nora what she had done. Perhaps Peggy had said she would tell the police about who she had been loaning the money to. That could have been what signed her death warrant.
"You seem very thoughtful, my dear."
Edgar stirred the sugar in his tea.
"Oh, just turning ideas over in my mind about everything," Kitty said. "I suppose I should go and dress. I'm sure I've heard Matt stirring."
Her husband entered the room as she spoke and came over to the fireplace.
"I thought I heard my name mentioned."
Matt was dressed, shaved, and ready for the day. He kissed her cheek and handed her a small box tied with pink ribbon. Kitty gave him the present she had ready.
"Happy anniversary, darling,"
Matt said as he unwrapped his gift.
"Oh, this is lovely."
Kitty admired her own present of the dainty little brooch.
"Thank you."
"What are you two lovebirds planning to do to celebrate?"
Edgar asked. Kitty rose and tugged the belt on her dressing gown a little tighter.
"I don't know. We hadn't decided. I was just going to go and dress."
She felt quite frumpy seeing Matt dressed while she was still in her night attire. It was their anniversary, so she felt she should make a special effort to dress up.
"Shall we go out for breakfast? Perhaps try the place in the park we were going to when we stumbled on Nora,"
Matt suggested.
"We should do a few nice things today. We could watch the skaters in the park too."
"That sounds lovely," Kitty agreed. Perhaps a walk through the park in the fresh air might clarify her thoughts on the murders.
"You two go and have a splendid time. The tea house is quite lovely,"
Edgar said, sipping his tea. A little later, wrapped up against the cold, Kitty and Matt set off to walk through the park to the tea rooms. Kitty couldn't suppress a small shudder as they passed the spot where they had discovered Nora's body at the rear of the apartment block.
"Are you all right, old thing?"
Matt asked affectionately as she squeezed his arm.
"You've been very quiet this morning."
"I'm sorry, I can't help thinking about everything. I promise I shall be better company when we reach the tea rooms," Kitty said.
The fountain in front of the building, which probably looked delightful in warmer weather, was turned off and wrapped in sacking. Kitty presumed to protect it against the frost. The tea rooms had a weather-beaten sign announcing it as the casino in the park. The roof was high and tiled and styled almost in a Chinese fashion.
"Papa said it wasn't ever a casino, although that was what it used to be called," Kitty said as they approached.
"He said it meant little house in Italian and was built for ladies originally."
"It's an interesting place. The roof is very impressive."
Matt held the door open for her as they entered. The restaurant was every bit as good as Edgar had said. It was decorated for Christmas and was already busy. They settled down near a window with a view of the park and ordered bacon and eggs. Matt toasted her with coffee, and they spent a pleasant hour before walking back along the wet paths where a slow thaw had begun to set in. The snow, which had covered the grass, had started to recede in the areas where the weak sunlight had caused it to melt. Patches of green were now poking through, and water dripped from the black, bare branches of the trees. The park was huge, and they paused to watch the ice skaters on the lake for a while. They reached the lobby of the apartment just as Mortimer was on his way out. He was wrapped up warmly in a dark grey overcoat with a dark red scarf and black Homburg hat. He had a small stash of packages wrapped in brown paper under his arm.
"Good morning. Did you enjoy the party last night?" Matt asked. "As much as could be expected in the circumstances, obviously. Got home a bit late, no taxis."
Mortimer looked rather the worse for wear. Dark circles lay under his eyes, and his skin was sallow.
"It must have been very difficult," Kitty soothed. "Are you off to the post office too?"
Mortimer glanced down at the packages, as if he had temporarily forgotten that he was carrying them.
"Yes, I missed the mail carrier, so I thought I would drop them off. I doubt they will arrive on time, but at least they will have gone. In all the upset over Nora and Peggy, normal chores seem to have escaped me."
The lobby doors opened while they were talking to Mortimer, and Lorena entered. She too was dressed for the cold in a sable coat and hat.
"Oh my, I seem to have run into everyone this morning," she said as she wiped her shoes on the mat.
"We have just come back from breakfast in the park. It's our wedding anniversary today," Kitty said.
"Congratulations to you both. Horatio telephoned early this morning to say there was a stack of mail here for Mother. I thought I should take care of it before we set off for the airport later," Lorena explained.
"Are you going from Newark? I hope the runways are clear," Mortimer said.
"Rudolph telephoned them and apparently all is well. I must admit it will be nice to feel some sun on my face. This cold is awful," Lorena said.
"Did you say you were going to California?" Matt asked.
"Yes, I had better get a move on. It will take well over an hour to get to the airport, and our flight leaves at 2 o'clock. I left Rudolph sorting out arrangements for when we get there. As it's Christmas Eve, a lot of the car rental places and taxi companies are closing up early."
Lorena pressed the button to call the elevator. Mortimer wished her a good holiday and left, while Matt and Kitty joined Lorena to ascend upwards.
"I hope you have the chance to have a rest while you're away. Perhaps the police will have caught your mother's killer by the time you return,"
Matt said as the elevator started to slow for their floor.
"You would hope so, but I haven't heard much from that Lieutenant Tanfield so far," Lorena said as Matt opened the doors once the cage had stopped.
They said goodbye to Lorena and returned to Edgar's apartment. He had dressed and collected his newspaper while they had been gone.
"Did you have a nice time at breakfast?" he asked, lowering his paper as they entered the room.
"It was lovely, thank you,"
Kitty replied. We just ran into Mortimer and Lorena in the lobby.
I'm surprised Morty is still standing after the amount he was sinking at the bar last night,
Edgar observed dryly.
He didn't look too good, I must say. He was off to the post office with a pile of packages. It seems to be a theme lately. I expect it's all last-minute Christmas things.
Matt took a seat on the sofa. Lorena had come to collect Nora's post before heading off to the airport, Kitty said, perching on the cushion next to Matt.
It's all right for some, Edgar grumbled.
He folded his newspaper and set it aside on the table.
A spot of winter sunshine sounds just the ticket.
It seemed to be thawing a little outside, Kitty said. The air didn't feel quite as cold.
That's something, I suppose. Less chance of breaking one's ankles on the sidewalks, Edgar said.
There was a short ring on the doorbell.
I'll go.
Matt stood and went to answer the door. He returned a moment later, accompanied by Lorena.
I'm so sorry to intrude, but I need to ask a favor.
Lorena looked at Edgar. Kitty thought she seemed annoyed.
Of course, my dear girl, if it's in my power.
Edgar had risen from his seat when Lorena had entered the room.
I have just been informed by Horatio that he is terminating his service today and will be leaving shortly. I suppose that now he has received that far too generous bequest from my mom's estate, all sense of loyalty is gone. Anyway, I have asked him to leave his keys with Enrique on the front desk, and I wondered if you might have this key, just in case of emergencies or problems while Rudy and I are away.
Lorena opened her black patent leather handbag and extracted a small bunch of keys, which she passed to Edgar.
Of course, my dear. How very unexpected of him,
Edgar remarked as he accepted the keyring and slipped it into his jacket pocket.
Could you check on the apartment after he has gone? There are boxes waiting for the movers, but I want to be assured that no damage has been done and nothing stolen. Although Rudy and I have removed everything we felt was of value already,
Lorena muttered.
Certainly. Did Horatio say where he was going? Edgar asked.
To his family, I think. I didn't ask for any details, but he definitely mentioned them. Something about his nieces? Thank you for doing this, Edgar. I do appreciate it. I expect I shall see you when we get back in the new year.
Lorena said her goodbyes, and Matt showed her out of the apartment.
That's a turn up for the books.
Edgar subsided back onto his chair. Quite. Horatio didn't say anything last night when he was in the lobby. I thought he was all set to see his notice period out. I wonder what's changed his mind, Kitty said.
I don't suppose the idea of Christmas alone in an apartment full of packed moving boxes is very attractive,
Matt said as he retook his place beside Kitty.
No, I don't suppose it is,
Kitty frowned. Chapter 23. Edgar announced that he had a long-standing lunch appointment with some friends and would be back late, leaving Kitty and Matt alone in the apartment. Matt switched on the radio, hoping to catch a weather forecast and to listen to some Christmas music. Kitty listened with half an ear to the radio while her mind continued to puzzle over the murders.
I wonder if Horatio has given Lorena a forwarding address, Kitty said.
Matt looked up from the dining table where he was setting out another jigsaw puzzle.
I don't know. Why would he? Unless it's to arrange payment of anything he's owed. I must admit that murder investigations here are very different to those in Devon. Everyone here seems to be allowed to come and go as they please. It must be a nightmare to gather evidence.
I suppose it must be more difficult in a city to keep track of people. There are so many ways they can just disappear if they wish.
Kitty knew what he meant. In England, someone was sure to know where a person had gone and would be likely to see them on a bus or a train.
That's true,
Matt agreed.
I wonder why he posted the parcels of gifts if he is going home. There were only a couple of small packages.
I saw Xavier take them to the post office this morning, Kitty said. I mean, surely he'll be there before the parcels. They weren't very big and would have fit in a suitcase or even a coat pocket. Matt looked up from his puzzle.
Yes, you're right. That is odd. I wonder how he is getting home to his family. He told me he had very little money left from his savings when Nora suggested he might retire. He said he had spent it on medical fees and medicine for his sister. Tickets are expensive and hard to come by last minute on Christmas Eve.
Then he was left $10,000 in Nora's will because he was still in her service at the time of her death. He must have known about her will. Everyone says he was always snooping around. Kitty had a bad feeling developing in the pit of her stomach.
Peggy would have trusted Horatio more than anyone if he suggested she take Nora's things to the pawn shop. He could have helped cover up that they were missing until she could redeem the tickets, Matt said. He had keys for some of the locked cabinets where the most valuable things were kept.
He may have needed money urgently for medicine or to pay for fees and given Peggy the money back when they were paid. It would be better for him if Peggy took the items to the pawnbrokers, as the shop staff would be less likely to think they were stolen since she looked so respectable. Kitty looked at her husband. Matt nodded his head slowly.
Then Peggy could have said she was going to tell someone about why she was pawning the silver. She wasn't the cleverest of girls, but she could have begun to put the pieces together.
Kitty jumped up from her seat. We have to do something. We have to confront him and tell that beastly Lieutenant Tanfield.
We may be too late. He could have already left. Did your father leave Lorena's key here? Matt asked.
Kitty hurried into the hall to look inside the painted Chinese-style bowl where her father habitually left the keys. Yes, it's here. She picked it up and waved it at Matt.
Wait,
Matt cautioned her as she went to go for the front door.
We need to make sure he's still there and let Lieutenant Tanfield know. If we're right, then Horatio Blackstock is a dangerous man. We can't just go blundering in there.
What do you suggest? Kitty asked, her hand still on the door latch. She knew Matt was right to be cautious, but she wanted to catch Horatio and prevent him from getting away. Matt moved to the telephone and called down to the front desk. Kitty waited at the entrance to the sitting room, fidgeting with impatience.
Enrique, do you know if Horatio is still here? Mrs. Briggs told us he was leaving today and we were hoping to say goodbye to him before he went.
Matt winked at Kitty.
You haven't seen him leave yet. Thank you so much.
Matt replaced the receiver on the cradle.
He's still in Nora's apartment then.
Kitty's heart raced.
I'll call Lieutenant Tanfield now. Open the front door and listen out for the elevator or any movement on the stairs,
Matt said as he picked the receiver up once more. Kitty hurried back to the front door and opened it a crack so she could listen out for any movement from the penthouse floor. Matt was talking on the telephone and she hoped he had managed to get hold of the lieutenant. It was hard to hear what might be happening upstairs in Nora's apartment, so she crept out onto the landing to try and listen. She thought she could hear some muffled bumps and bangs from overhead, as if boxes were being moved around. Matt was still on the telephone, so she made her way quickly and quietly to the foot of the stairs that led from their landing to the penthouse floor. She knew from where she had overheard Lorena talking to Peggy just a few days earlier that she should be able to hear what was going on if she loitered in the stairwell. She kept her back to the wall and slowly climbed up step by step. She thought she heard something, but there was a wailing of sirens from outside the building. The noises up ahead seemed to have stopped now, and she was about to turn around and head back down to her father's apartment when she heard a footstep on the stairs behind her.
Mrs. Bryant, whatever are you doing?
Horatio Blackstock blocked her retreat, preventing her from descending. He had a quizzical look on his face and a cold glint in his dark brown eyes.
Oh, my goodness, you startled me.
Kitty pressed her hand to her chest.
Lorena said you had gone and I heard strange noises, so I thought there might be burglars in Nora's flat.
Her blood pounded in her veins, and she hoped he would believe her. He must have gone down a floor in the elevator while she was on the stairs, and probably saw the door was open to their apartment. She swallowed hard. If he had caught any of Matt's conversation, then he would know that her husband had been calling the police about him.
Well, as you can see, it's just me. Why don't you come on up to the apartment? Take a look for yourself to put your mind at rest,
Horatio suggested, as he moved a step nearer to her. Kitty edged up a step to keep a space between them. His proximity was scaring her.
Oh, it's fine. I should get back down to Matt. He'll wonder where I've gone.
Kitty tried to sound cool and collected.
Oh, but I insist, Mrs. Bryant. It would be terrible to leave and have someone thinking I'd stolen something that wasn't rightfully mine.
Horatio moved forward again, and Kitty realized they were almost at the landing. She stepped up again and out onto the landing. A glance at the elevator showed her the cage was missing, probably where Horatio had used it to reach their floor. The sirens outside must have masked the sound of the elevator moving. The only way down from the penthouse floor was via the steps she had just climbed, and Horatio was now at the top of the stairs.
I'm certain you are a very honest man, Mr. Blackstock, Kitty said.
Are you, Mrs. Bryant? Does your husband feel the same way? You two are both private eyes in England, aren't you?
Horatio continued to walk towards her, forcing her along the landing and the open door of Nora's apartment.
England is very different to America, Kitty said.
She debated whether to scream for Matt. She knew this could push Horatio over the edge, however, and her intention at the moment was to keep him talking and keep him calm. Matt would know where she had gone and would probably come upstairs to find her as soon as he was off the telephone.
Are your bags all packed, ready to leave?
Kitty asked.
Lorena said she thought you were going to your family.
That will be nice for Christmas, better than staying here by yourself. She knew she was just making small talk, but if she could keep him engaged, then it might buy enough time for Matt to reach her or for the police to arrive.
Yes, ma'am. I'm all set to go. I got a bus route planned, ticket bought, and my case packed. I travel light. Not many possessions,
Horatio said.
I suppose that must be why you posted Nora's jewels on ahead in those packets that Xavier took to the post office for you this morning.
Kitty knew this was risky, but they were almost at the door to the apartment now, and she didn't want to go inside.
And why would I have Miss Nora's jewels, ma'am?
Horatio's voice was silky smooth.
Because she owed you, didn't she? Years of not paying a very good wage, of not loaning you money to take proper care of your sister while she's been so ill. That jewellery was insurance in case she had taken you out of her will. Something to fall back on. It wasn't really stealing, was it? Not if it was in payment of a debt.
Kitty knew she was gambling that she had worked out Horatio's rationale for stealing Nora's jewels.
I'm real glad you understand, Mrs. Bryant. Peggy understood, leastways I thought she did.
Horatio had a calculating gleam in his eyes. Kitty tried to appear relaxed as she listened for any indication that Matt might be coming up the stairwell.
That was why Peggy helped you, wasn't it? Borrowing a few small pieces to raise some money if you were short of dollars to pay the medical bills before payday?
Kitty tried to keep the sympathetic note in her voice.
Peggy had a good heart. She could see the problems I had. Miss Nora didn't miss looking at those things for a couple of weeks at a time. Peggy would get them back every payday,
Horatio said.
You would rearrange things when you cleaned, persuade Nora that she was mistaken and they were in a different cabinet.
Kitty's keen ears thought she detected a faint sound behind Horatio on the stairwell.
Peggy was a nice, respectable-looking girl, ideal to get the staff at the pawnbrokers to loan her money. It was too risky for you to go yourself. They might look at you and think you had stolen them,
I can see why you're good at your job, Mrs. Bryant,
Horatio said. Then Nora decided to marry Mortimer, and he wanted you out, didn't he? No reminders of her previous husband, and no one to spy on him and tell tales back to Nora. Kitty noticed Horatio's hands curl into fists at